I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11. Next hour, 10 to 11 o'clock today, as every Thursday, we'll have our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with a representative from Americans for Prosperity, and I believe it will be today the new state director, Starla Brown. They had a great event Tuesday night. I don't think they had enough chairs in the room for everybody that showed up, so that was very nice. They had an open house at their offices in Ridgeland as they kind of kick off their grassroots efforts for the year. So I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that, find out how people can get involved. Got a lot of work to do here in Mississippi for freeing us from, whether it's regulations or taxes, all these kinds of things. The federal government is lost. It is up to us to try to kind of barricade ourselves here, try to create some kind of a state where we can enjoy some level of freedom here. And our legislature, our Republican government in this state is not necessarily predisposed to err on the side of freedom, economic or personal. So a lot of work to do. Americans for Prosperity is one of those groups that kind of helps organize people to do that. So we'll talk about that next hour with Starla Brown. Today's the 21st. I'm looking at the date. That date means something to me. You ever have these days where it's somebody's birthday? So if you're listening, to you, friend or relative, happy birthday. I'm going to have to figure this one out. It's been bugging me since I started my notes today and dated them at the top. I'm racking my brain trying to think who it is that I need to reach out to today. Quote of the day today is Thomas Massie. He said, "The most responsible for the government's ineffective, unconstitutional, deadly, soul-crushing, economically devastating COVID response will never be held accountable, but never forget who they are because they should never be trusted again. Those most responsible for the government's ineffective, unconstitutional, deadly, soul-crushing, economically devastating COVID response will never be held accountable, but never forget who they are because they should never be trusted again." We will never forget. WYAB will never forget who these people are that led us through this mess. And I didn't trust them going in, but I think I probably have a lot of company on the other side of this thing. Never to be trusted again. That's Thomas Massie, the libertarian congressman from the state of Kentucky. Just a little bit of economic stuff today. I'll be honest, I got into the studio today. I had no idea what I was going to talk about. I was kind of in a mood. I was listening to some stuff this morning as I was getting ready this morning. Some of my economic nerd stuff, some financial stuff. And really realizing, look, we're circling the drain right now. And really what I was thinking, on my way into the studio today, I pretty much have made the decision, I'm bugging out. I don't know if that makes people mad. I don't know if people think, well, you know, you got to stay here and fight. You know, really, I don't know we have the tools to fight in this country. We don't have enough people that can think for themselves. We really don't. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I run across a couple of stories about cognitive biases. And I'm probably going to get to it today because I'm almost sick of talking about everything else. There's a small amount of frustration, sometimes a large amount of frustration that goes on with seeing what's going on and then watching vast numbers of people. I'm talking 95% of people misdiagnose a problem, not understand it, but talk so authoritatively on it. People get behind people, whether they're politicians or celebrities, They get behind people, and you just realize what they're doing is going to have no effect but to make things worse. And yet people line up behind them. They worship some of these people. And it gets to a point, in my mind, is that I just don't think we have the tools here to right this ship. But I could be wrong. I'm not leaving tomorrow. But I would imagine, as I'm an observer here, as a libertarian, not playing the right, left, Democrat, conservative, Republican, any of those games, I'm an observer of these things. I may turn out to be a geographic observer as well. Now, I don't know where I go. I'm going to look for the place where I will be bothered the least by anybody who wants to lord power over me. And that may end up being some third world country where they're just the government is such a mess that they just leave people alone. And if you come to their country with a few bucks, they'll leave you alone. That's maybe my best hope. But anyway, I saw a headline today on the financial stuff. It was on MarketWatch. Here's the headline. It says, U.S. unemployment claims dip to 184,000 and remain at a half-century low. And this is one of the things we see in financial headlines. This is unemployment claims, and those are always, when you get these numbers in the hundreds of thousands, those are first-time unemployment gains. I didn't look and see how many people are on. Obviously, we had a lot of people on unemployment during the end of Trump's term, beginning of Biden's term. God knows everybody's hiring because the labor force is in such a wreck. But this is first-time job unemployment claims, and it is at the lower end of the range. So this headline from MarketWatch makes things sound like they're going great, don't they? U.S. unemployment claims dip to 184,000 and remain at half-century low. Well, I immediately went to look and just see, well, let's see where we really stand. And there's something called the civilian labor force participation rate. And this is the percentage of working-aged, able-bodied Americans who can work, and what percentage of that population has actually got a job right now. Because to look at this headline from MarketWatch, and these are the kinds of things that a Biden administration or a Trump administration or an Obama administration, they trot these out when the numbers are low to tell you there's some level of economic success in the country. I know the real numbers are in things like these obscure charts that nobody will ever hear about. You'll see the Market Watch thing. You'll see the headlines about first-time unemployment. CNBC will tell you that the economy is humming along. No one will talk to you about this civilian labor force participation rate, maybe because it's boring to a lot of people. I don't care. I'm going to talk about it here. I found an interactive chart. This one goes back to March of 2002. Right now, the percentage of working-age adults, able-bodied working-age adults that have the ability to work, the number of them that are working are 62.4%. This is as of March of 2022. Now, that is certainly better than it was at the depths of COVID when they shut everything down and everybody jumped on unemployment. I guess it bottomed out at 60.2. Now it has risen up to 62.4%. Again, this is 62.4% of working-age adults have actually got a job. So that's 37.6% of working-age adults able-bodied. Now, some of these people don't want to work. You know, some people are sitting at home. Moms are raising kids. Excuse me, that's sexist. One parent, maybe the dad. I was a single custody dad of my children. But 37.6% of working-age adults are not working. Now, how is this historically? Because if we've got this great headline about 184,000 first-time unemployment claims, it's a half-century low. We must be really, everybody must be working. The participation rate of civilians during the height of the 2008 recession was 66.1%, meaning we're down, what is that? We're down 66.12. We're down almost 3.5. Yeah, about 3.5%. Fewer people are working right now than they were during the recession, the great financial recession. We have fewer people working right now. I went ahead and this first particular chart did not give me a long historical context. I've talked about this chart before. It's what makes my ratings so high. back in the It was really peaked around 2000. And at that point, about 67% of working age adults were gainfully employed. We are now down at, again, about 62 point something. So we're down 5% of the working population. This is the year 2000. If you take a look at this chart of how many working age, capable, able adults are actually working, if you look at this chart, it really tells you all you need to know about the state of the U.S. economy. And what it is that this new millennium, it's not going to be America's time. Unless we make some drastic changes, and I go back to the point I made when I started this segment, which is I have no faith, absolutely no faith, that the American people can understand what's going on, much less address the causes of it. And the causes, you know, we essentially would have to get to a point, and I don't know, maybe you have more faith in our fellow citizens. Very difficult to do when you go in and you see people still in masks in the store. You just realize they're just... people just really aren't that capable of thinking. It's maybe a depressing thought, and I certainly don't mean there's a large number of people. I think a lot of them listen to this show. My communications with people that listen to this show in particular are, you know, you got to be kind of interested in some of this stuff, so you've got caught a clue. But the vast majority of people in this country are just not prepared really to understand the systemic problems we have. When you look at this labor force participation rate, you just see it soar from the 1950s all the way up to the year 2000. Now, part of this is because in 1971, we decided to throw all in with a debt-based society, and suddenly moms who had been staying home with kids went, oh my gosh, between debt and taxes, I got to get out and get a job. So more and more women entered the workforce. God love you if you're a woman and you want a career. That's absolutely fine with me, but I do believe that financial pressure is what is most responsible for two spouses working. I know a lot of guys be happy to stay at home and raise kids if they could, but they can't because everything is expensive. Got to pay your taxes. So this chart just shows really the story, the trajectory of the United States, and it's not an encouraging one. As I say, but I will come back in a second. I wanted to start today's show with just some inspirational words from leaders. I need to be renewed. And if you can't tell in my voice, I think I'm a little burnt out. I'm a little sour. I'm a little on the downside. And so when I come back, we do have at least one of our leaders has got some inspirational words for us. I mean, really, get ready to be moved. Kamala Harris spoke to a group of what appeared to be in the backdrop. I don't know what the setting was or what the context was, but she spoke to a group. They're all in camo in the back. It's our military. And as I say, just stick around. We all need some inspiring words from time to time, and you can count on Kamala Harris to deliver them. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with us. All right, I promised you some inspiring words from our leadership here in this country. It's something to restore my faith in the direction of the United States as I look at Costa Rica. Portugal's looking pretty attractive right now. Apparently the cost of living is good there. They did go a little nuts with the masking and stuff, so I've got to take that into consideration as I try to choose my bug-out location. But it's good to know we've got the intelligentsia in charge of the United States. This is Kamala Harris. I'm assuming she's talking to the newly created Donald Trump Space Force. You know, as I say that out loud, it is the cartoon that America has become. We have Space Force. Oh, this was, you know, because this was Donald Trump's idea, it was just fantastic. We've got this whole new branch of the military. I'm sure there's a ton of funding that goes into it. It's a way for the military, you know, good God, we've plucked these pigeons for everything we can for tanks and ships and missiles and overseas bases. But we can probably get more of them if we tell them we need to move out into space. Yeah, there's only so many countries we can put bases into. I think we've got bases in 120 or 140 countries, around 800 military bases around planet Earth. We're running out of spots to go stick our people. And give fat contracts to the contractors. Let's use infinite space. This was, of course, Donald Trump's idea, and of course, everybody cheered for it. So I believe this is Kamala Harris. Now you're getting what you wanted. You got your Space Force, and now look who's in charge of it. Kamala Harris delivered these inspirational insights with the people that I guess. And, you know, I'm looking at this. This has got to be Space Force because it's military, and you'll hear her comments in a second here. But they're all wearing what look like desert fatigues. I'm no cosmonaut. Shouldn't these be like black uniforms with little, maybe some bedazzling on them? Look like stars? The desert camo seems, we're going to have to spend, they must not have enough funding for their new uniforms. That must be the problem. We need to immediately increase the budget for Space Force to get them some, you know, Space Force really. It should be the unitard. I have been waiting. If you look at any of the movies from the 50s, 60s, 70s about the future, and it was usually about around this time, 2020, in the year 2020, everybody's always wearing, you know, a unitard. I mean, I guess Star Trek had pants and a shirt. Your shirt was just the color of your station in those things. But the unitard, kind of the Mork and Mindy, the unitard was supposed to be the thing. They looked kind of like a foil suit or something like that. A lot of the space things, maybe this is what is actually going to come true with Space Force. Anyway, here's Kamala Harris talking to Space Force.
Space is exciting. It spurs our imaginations, and it forces us to ask big questions. Space, it affects us all, and it connects us all.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, what's so sad about Kamala Harris is that not only is she's evil, she's completely vacuous. The woman just doesn't have, maybe has never had an original idea in her entire life. She is, I keep referring to them as empty suits. It's really the best term I can give to everybody in the Biden administration. They are pathetically uninteresting to me. Except for the amount of power that was given to them, because the two-party system has created a situation where every time, you know, our side, depending on which side you're on, comes into power, you're happy to give them tons and tons of power, and then all of a sudden they hand it off to the next group, right? When they abuse the power, we get sick of them, and we hand it over to the other side, and the other side garners more power because half the people in the country cheer for them to get more power. They get more power, and then the country's dissatisfied with that side, and they hand it right back to the other side. It just gets more and more powerful. The government gets bigger and bigger. We keep giving more and more power to them, and this is where we are now. This group is leading the most powerful organization that has ever inhabited planet Earth. And this is what we've got. Now, I was listening to this at the beginning of the break, queuing it up, and I realized just how absurd it is. I might play this again for just how bad Kamala Harris is. She can't even get a good speech writer. She's reading these things. She's not saying, I don't like, presidential speeches. I'm well on record for saying I don't like addresses to the nation. I don't care about the State of the Union. I don't care about any of these things because they're just a bunch of pandering and spin done by a professional speechwriter. They have nothing to do with reality. They're soaring promises about things they don't really care about just to placate a people that is being abused by their ruling class. Kamala Harris can't even get a good speechwriter. Once again, this is what she says to Space Force.
Space is exciting.
Woo-hoo!
It spurs our imaginations, and it forces us to ask big questions. Space, it affects us all, and it connects us all.
Well, it's like she's reading a Dr. Seuss book. So I'm looking at this, and I cannot help be reminded of this. So pardon me. I'm in a weird mood. I need to get my stuff together before Starla, who is a professional policy person, comes into the studio. But I can't help but listen to Kamala Harris and not think of Idiocracy. Another common reference here on this show. If you have not seen the movie Idiocracy, then spurred by that Kamala Harris clip right there of her speaking, you need to see it. I'm going to play a little clip from the movie here, exactly what it was about.
What the hell is this?
Tastes like Gatorade.
It
Is that that Brando stuff?
So what this is, I've done a very terrible job of queuing this up. If you haven't seen Idiocracy, let me just tell you what it is. It's a guy, one of the Wilson brothers. There's Owen and Greg or something. I don't know. One of the it doesn't matter. There's a couple of brothers that are stars, and one of them's in this movie. And he is a very average guy during, you know, regular times. And he gets essentially frozen, and he's transported into the future. Now, when he was, you know, during these times, he's just an average guy. He's not very smart, but he's still got some level of basic common sense. And so when he wakes up 500 years from now, he's the smartest man in the world because everybody has gotten so dumb. And here's the difference. I'm going to let you listen to one of their cabinet meetings. So what happens is he finds out that the big corporations, very similar. It's a great commentary on what's going on. One of the big corporations that's like a Gatorade corporation called Brondo has basically bought everything. They've convinced everybody that Brondo is great. You give Brondo to your children when they're babies. You give Brondo to, you know, Brondo is everything because it's got electrolytes in it. And so they start spraying it on their crops and all their crops die. But they don't stop. Even though all the crops die, they don't stop because the marketing message is Brondo. It's got electrolytes. It's what plants crave. Even as the plants die, people are too stupid to figure out that, no, this is not good for your crops. So they've got no food, but they continue to spray the Brondo on there. This guy wakes up from 500 years earlier, realizes everybody's so stupid, and he says, wait, maybe we shouldn't be using Brondo if it's killing all of the plants. But people can't get this through their head. I mean, the social commentary of this movie is fantastic. And I'm going to let you listen to the cabinet meeting and just imagine this is really kind of where we are, listening to Kamala Harris, listening to Joe Biden have any kind of an off-the-cuff remark that's not written by one of his speechwriters when he's not hopped up on crystal meth or whatever they give him, whatever chemical cocktail they give him to get him through a 30-minute, hour-long presentation sometimes. Sometimes he's just, they wake him up from a nap and he starts talking and he babbles incoherently. This is where we are. We are already there. I think this Idiocracy takes place in 2300s. But we're already there now. This is a cabinet meeting discussing the issue of spraying the sports drink on the fields that's killing all the crops. And the new president, new guy who's arrived from the past that realizes the mistake they're making is trying to say maybe we shouldn't be spraying this stuff on the crops.
Out of the way. This time, he would lead.
For the last time, I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
The Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look. The plants aren't growing, so I'm pretty sure that the Brondo's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem. I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What?
I'm sorry, I'm indulging myself here. You got to see this movie. This reminds me of probably what's going on right now. We've printed up so much money that we've got inflation. The people are starting to complain. What should we do? Let's print up some more money and send them out some more money. But printing up money in the first place is what caused the inflation. But the people are hurting, so we need to print up some money and send them some money to help with the inflation. I mean, this is the conversation that's going on right now. We are so dangerously close to Idiocracy if we're not there. And if you go into the grocery store today and see about 60% of the people in there wearing cloth masks, you realize we're a hell of a lot closer than any of us want to believe. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. You know, playing that clip from Idiocracy, and it just reminds me of what we're doing now. You know, we've printed up too much money, which has caused inflation, which is hurting people, and so the prescription is to print up more money and give it to people, which will just cause further inflation. And when that inflation hurts people even worse, you know what they're going to do? Anyone? Anyone? They're going to print up more money and send it out to you. This is the Idiocracy strategy. Think about what we've done with vaccines. You have got people out there doing the same electrolyte Brondo argument from Idiocracy on the vaccines. You got to get your vaccines. Well, it doesn't stop me from contracting the disease or spreading it to you. Why do you care if I have it? Because it protects you. You being vaccinated protects me. Well, doesn't your vaccine protect you? Well, no, I can still catch it. Well, then your vaccine doesn't work. Well, you know what I mean? It's this, yeah, but the answer is always, well, you got to take another one. And everybody's got to have it, but it doesn't work. I know, but if everybody has the vaccine that doesn't work, then somehow that's going to work. It's the same, the mask, just everything that we're discussing these days. Look at our foreign policy. Look at the foreign policy of the United States. It is, we go over into the Middle East and the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, we bomb a bunch of people, we kill a bunch of people, they lash out at us, and then we say, instead of saying, oh my gosh, maybe we shouldn't have invaded the Middle East and set up a bunch of military bases, and, you know, even if you believe the story of 9/11, Osama bin Laden did come out and say, you know, we're tired of the infidels being over here and setting up bases in Saudi Arabia and these places and being in our holy lands. And so instead of saying, oh, my gosh, we've made a big mistake, we've ticked off a whole segment of the world by bombing them and starving 500,000 Iraqi children during the 1990s to death. Instead of acknowledging that, we go, oh, you know what we should do? More involvement in the Middle East. We should make more people more angry at us. We're doing this again with Russia right now. Russia says, don't move NATO any closer to Russia. So we keep moving NATO closer to Russia. And then Russia lashes out in Ukraine because they told us, don't move NATO and don't send weapons onto our border anymore. We're not going to put up with it. Finally, they lash out. And you know what we've decided to do? Expand NATO into Finland and Sweden. More NATO expansion, which is what led to this in the first place. We're living in Idiocracy. I call it a documentary. And we are seeing this. Every absurd policy that backfires is done again to address the backfiring, which creates more anyone backfiring. And this is done on both sides of the aisle. If we cannot see this stuff, and I would imagine, I'm just spitballing here, I would imagine I could think of example after example after example. Look at the war on drugs. Look at the war on drugs. What have we done? We have set up a system that has actually made drugs over the past 50 years as we've spent more than $1 trillion fighting the war on drugs. Drugs are more prevalent now. They are cheaper. They are more potent. We lock up a ton of our citizens. I mean, everything the drug war says it is against is exactly what we've created. We've created violence in the streets. And to combat the violence in the streets that is largely spawned by the gangs, the criminal gangs that sprout up around any prohibited substance, same way it did in the 1930s in Chicago with Al Capone, we decide to crack down and go harder on the war on drugs, which creates just anyone, more violence. I mean, it's across the... I'm going to stop thinking now so that I don't use the rest of the show just giving you every single example of how we have terrible policy that leads to a horrific result that we decide it's just because we didn't do enough of the terribleness. Look at education. We spend more money. Education gets worse. What's the solution every single time? What do they say? What do we got to do? We got to do what? Spend more money. We spend more money. It gets worse. We come out with a government program. We didn't like No Child Left Behind because it was such a miserable failure. So what do? We go to Common Core. And when it's such a miserable failure, we go on to the next thing. We get more money and a new policy. When education was fine in the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s, we were doing great. They set up the Department of Education. They start rolling these things out. Each one of them fail and make education worse and worse and worse. And we respond by rolling out another program. It is just, it's the electrolyte argument. That's how we're running our government. It is pure idiocracy. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Sure. Am I the one?
Yeah, you are the one.
What's your name, sir?
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike. So, listen, the first time caller, and I don't listen to you, but came across you. I'm driving, so just want to chat. Man, you are depressing me. So, you know.
I've told you. I started the show telling you I'm in a mood.
What your goal is here this morning, but... you know, as far as the vaccine, I can give you my opinion on that.
All right.
If you will allow me to speak. So as a cancer survivor, somebody that takes chemo every day, I am fully vaccinated, twice boosted. So, you know, yes, I believe in a person's choice to choose. However, it's a pretty pathetic thing if people, you know, can't get vaccinated like you do against polio or the flu or something like that. This has been politicized by folks like you, and so people have not stepped. We have, like, I think Mississippi has like a 51% vaccination rate, and that's pathetic. I think it's the lowest in the nation.
Who has the highest vaccination rate?
Excuse me.
No, you don't get to come on here and just pontificate. We're having a conversation here.
Hey,
so,
Mike, can I speak?
You've been speaking.
So, yeah. Well, let me finish, please. So, you know, there's no way for you to know just walking around that, hey, if you saw me on the street, there's no way for you to know that I'm on chemo and I'm a vulnerable person. So, you know, even though I'm protected, you know, yeah, I've been protected, you know, probably not going to spread it. I do it for myself, but I also do it for my fellow citizen.
What does the vaccine do for your fellow citizen? What does your vaccine do for your fellow citizen? Because you getting the shot, you can still contract the disease
I'll tell you. When that person that chooses not to get vaccinated has to go to the hospital and runs up the cost for our medical system, it costs me somewhere. It costs every one of us. Look at the million people, Americans, that have been killed by COVID now. How many is it?
Well, it's people who've died with COVID, but COVID didn't kill a million people. But I'm asking, specifically, you said that you took the vaccine to protect other people. I'm wondering, if the vaccine does not prevent transmission, then how does that help other people?
Mike, the vaccine hasn't killed the first person, as far as I can know.
Have you gone to open VAERS?
Americans.
Have you looked at the VAERS system? Do you know what that is?
Say again?
Have you looked at the VAERS, the CDC's site, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System?
I have no idea.
Yeah, see, it shows about 30,000 people have been killed by the vaccine, and about another 100,000 have been permanently disabled from it. So it's not completely safe, but again, my question is, if you can still catch the disease and spread it on the vaccine, then how are you doing something for somebody else?
Like I said, the statistics show that you are much, much more likely to have to go to the hospital and, die. So if you catch COVID and you're having to be in the ICU for months and months, look what that's costing our healthcare system.
Well, isn't that the case for every disease? I mean, there's a lot of, do you think that it's...
You can't prevent cancer.
What about the people who eat bad food their whole life and they become diabetic?
Oh,
do you have the same level of...
No, we're
talking about healthcare costs. So do you kind of hold some contempt for people who eat poor diets and end up being type 2 diabetic?
If a person is poor and they can't afford quality health, food, then I think we're making the fact that they're poor people, we're holding that against them. You going to hold somebody, the fact that they're poor, you going to hold that against them?
I don't really know what their socioeconomic status really has to do with anything. I mean, everybody's got a choice to not eat a bunch of sugar. You don't have to be rich to not eat a ton of sugar. But I'm just saying, I mean, this idea that the vaccination is some kind of a thing to help all of society is not borne out by anything even the CDC or the FDA says.
Mike, statistics say otherwise.
What is the most heavily vaccinated states?
About folks like you, you get on the radio and you spew this stuff out like you're an authority, and you're not. It is totally inaccurate, and you know it.
Are you an authority? Are you an authority?
Soaking it in like sponges.
Are you an authority?
That's pathetic.
Are you an authority on this?
I absolutely am not. But I've got, I was raised with enough good common sense to say, you need to go get vaccinated. And
you just told the listening audience that this vaccine has never killed anybody, and I just gave you a website from the CDC you can go to. Yeah,
I'll definitely check that out. I don't take anybody's word for anything.
Sure.
I do my own thinking and my own research, and I'll look that up.
I
absolutely will.
Yeah.
But I know statistically, if you choose not to get vaccinated, the risk to you and those around you and society as a general, let me ask you this. Have you ever gotten a flu shot?
A long time ago. Haven't had one in 16 years.
Have you been vaccinated?
Not for COVID. Absolutely not. It's experimental. I'm not participating.
Uh-huh. That's laughable, Mike.
Why do they normally study vaccines for 7 to 10 years? Why do they normally do that?
Mike, the statistics are there, and you know it.
Yeah, what are the statistics you're pointing to?
Are much, much less likely to go to the hospital and eat up our health care dollars, making our premiums more expensive for everybody, and, soaking up health care, that could be otherwise spent on people that are having heart attacks or strokes or stuff like that.
Why, some of the most heavily, in Great Britain, 90% of the people that have been hospitalized over the past during the Omicron.
You depress me.
That's because you don't like the facts. You don't want the statistics.
And you can spew out this irresponsible stuff.
Why is it irresponsible to tell you that in Great Britain, 90% of the people that have contracted and been hospitalized for COVID have been vaccinated?
We're not in Great Britain. We're in America, man.
Oh, you think human beings are genetically different here? I mean, if this thing's so effective, I think Rhode Island has the highest case count right now of COVID. They're 95% of vaccinated.
Use the statistics to try and make your point. You're not looking at the bigger picture.
I'm using the facts to bolster my point.
Look at the bigger statistics. You know, and I know, and I'm going to say it one more time, the statistics for people that have been vaccinated, the risk of them dying and going to the hospital and eating up all of our health care is extremely significantly lower than those who choose not to be vaccinated and contract COVID.
But I'm giving you the statistics that show that's absolutely not true.
You got all this stuff and your unknowing people listening to you soak it up just like sponges. It's pathetic.
Okay. Well, see, you have given them another thing to think about. I encourage you to take a look at most heavily vaccinated states here in the country. I think it's Rhode Island's 95% vaccinated, but they have the highest case count of COVID right now. Great Britain, 90% of the people that have been hospitalized have been vaccinated. So just look at those things, and everybody can listen to your point of view and my point of view, and everybody gets to make up their own mind. It's a wonderful system.
There you go, man. We can agree on that.
Yep. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right. Got to jump to a break. Be right back.
I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And so
all right, only got a couple of minutes left in this hour. That caller really stoked some activity here on the phone line. She could be one of the new stars of the show. But I did want to take this quick call from a healthcare worker. Are you on the line with me?
I am. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Good morning.
Good morning. So what do you think about our little exchange there?
I'm really disappointed that there's not better education with patients, especially cancer patients, because what I have seen in my experience working with patients who I'm involved with a team that usually diagnoses cancer in a lot of people. And we're seeing more and more diagnoses of cancer just out of the blue since the vaccination started. And there is evidence out there that the vaccine is manipulating your DNA and making you more susceptible to cancers.
Well, you know, that's been proposed by some of these people who were just saying, hey, we need to be careful with this. There could be some unintended consequences. But you think that you are actually seeing that? Are doctors aware that this is coinciding with?
There are a few locally who are aware, who are kind of raising the flag. And I'm disappointed to say, you know, I've been in healthcare for 15 years. I cannot believe how blind some of these providers are.
Yeah, it's weird.
Doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, because there are very few that are actually reading the journal articles and discussing the data points and, you know, breaking down the articles and saying, well, you know, this article says this in the conclusion. However, that's not what the data reads.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know from doing research on my own, you know, I went to nursing school and did a thesis.
Hey, I'm so sorry. We're going to run into a hard break. Is there any way you can call back tomorrow? I'd love to talk to you in the first hour tomorrow if possible.
No.
Okay.
I'll be taking care of patients tomorrow.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We got to jump.
All right. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. It's Thursday. Every Thursday, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour here with Americans for Prosperity. And today, we have got the new state director, Starla Brown, in studio with us. Starla, welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be back.
Yeah, you had a great event on Tuesday night. You had your open house, and man, very well attended. I don't think you had enough chairs in the room.
I know. We had to pull a few more out, and that's great. I think for the activists here in the state of Mississippi, the one thing that I've started to see early on in this journey is that there's a lot of energy in the room. People are angry.
Yeah,
you know,
they're
frustrated. And, you know, speaking of energy, that's one of the reasons, right? They're paying more at the pump. And not just at the pump, but all the aspects that energy touches throughout the country.
Yes.
And so we're seeing a lot of people getting upset about that. I brought along someone with me today, so I want to just introduce him and say hello. Matt Dixon, who, no stranger to Mississippi, worked some time here with the legislator in the state, but is our deputy state director in our Michigan chapter. And so, you know, he's got an interesting story from the governor there. If you think gas prices are high, I want to kind of share with you what if someone campaigned on or a state did a particular type of policy, and I'd like him just to kind of share with you what they might have been looking at if that had happened.
Now, is this the Gretchen Whitmer?
Yes, this is Gretchen Whitmer.
Yeah, well, that precious cargo that we could spend some time on her alleged abduction by the FBI. But anyway, so you're up in Michigan, and
yep.
There have been energy policies up there in Michigan. And I guess one of the reasons to talk about this is that state policies affect these gas prices as well, too. It's not just international stuff. It's not just from the Biden. Is that a state can actually make energy policy better or worse, can make people have cheaper energy or more expensive energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, so Gretchen actually campaigned on I'll use the PG version of her campaign slogan, but it was fix the dang roads.
Yeah.
And how she wanted to do that was she was actually pushing for, up until 2019, to raise the gas tax. So she actually wanted to raise it up to 45 cents, which would actually put us right in line with California. So just figure we're at about the same price as Mississippi, about $3.75 on average for gas. And just imagine tacking 45 more cents onto that. I mean, it would hit your pocketbook and it would hurt every time you fill up.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that are the roads in Michigan. Well, she never got that, so your roads are probably still bad, I guess. Yeah. So,
Yeah, well, that's what we're known for.
That's the funniest thing about these governments is that they collect these things for infrastructure. I mean, they're constantly collecting money to keep infrastructure updated. I mean, there's fees that's on your water bill. You know, there's fees that are baked into every everything for roads and bridges. They neglect these things, and then they say, we need to come and collect more money. We need to raise taxes to fix the things that we took the money for to fix before and just never actually used it to fix these things.
Yep.
Yeah. It's that's quite amazing. When is she up for re-election?
This Whitmer? Year.
Is she really? Yep. Is she going to win again?
I couldn't tell you. We our filing deadline was actually this Tuesday, so we got 10 Republicans running against each other in the primary. We have a late primary in August, but then whoever emerges from there, it's going to be an interesting fight for sure.
Well, sitting down here and looking at some of the blue states like Michigan, and she was especially COVID tyrannical.
Oh, yeah.
Are people, even Democrats who might have voted for her last time around, are they not mad at her for what they did? Or are they so cowed and were so fearful of the disease that they think she was doing things in their best interest? I mean, I'm always wondering what the blue states think.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. At the very beginning of it, there was a lot of sentiment that she was looking out for everybody.
Kind of like Cuomo, you know.
Yeah, she was just trying to save us and... And, you know, as the years went by, I think the public sentiment is, you know, let's get back to normal. Let's get back to work. Let's have our kids go back to school. Let's have them, you know, go out and play high school sports without a mask on and everything. So,
right.
Yeah, I think the public sentiment is shifting towards that.
Well, I've been amazed. I watched like New York City with just the de Blasio that was just terrible. And you just watch what happened in New York City during COVID. I mean, one of, if not the most vibrant city on planet Earth, full of bustling activity, businesses everywhere, bodegas and little restaurants and dry cleaners. And then it turned into a ghost town. And I just expected these people now in New York City who have typically voted for the de Blasios and the Mayor Koches. I mean, they did have a couple of Republicans in there, Giuliani and Bloomberg, but you would think this is their big tide's going to turn in New York City. And then they went and elected this Eric Adams guy who is enacting the same policies again. And it's hard to watch. And I don't know why they're not so mad that they just want to make a wholesale change, but they just don't seem to be, they seem to be okay with it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, very, very bizarre.
Yeah, and, you know, I could add to that a little bit. Sometimes there's that fight or flight. So in Florida, I think the flight has been the thing. You know, my recently coming from there, that influx from New York is definitely seen in Florida. So people who wanted freedom and wanted out, but they're moving their businesses, too. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
You know, you talked about, like, being a ghost town. Some of that's not going to come back.
Yes, right.
You know, because it's going to go elsewhere where freedom and liberty prevail. In that business environment.
Well, so that's interesting, too. So your experience in Florida, as people came into the area, escaping those kinds of places that shut down and just stripped everybody of any quality of life, do they realize that, did they come to Florida for the freedom and say, I can't believe I ever voted for that in the first place? Or because a lot of the fear of people in the red states is these guys are going to bring their liberal voting records down here and turn our state purple or blue. But do you feel like these people have had a change of heart and realized the value of having some freedom?
I would say yes for some of them. I can't speak for everyone, right? Because I haven't talked to all of them yet. But I would say yes for some people. You know, when your business takes a hit, your livelihood,
your children,
right? The schools, everything. You're talking about things that are important to people's everyday lives, and so there's a lot of people who said, "Hey, we're going down there. Florida's open for business." Florida schools are open. My children get back to school and get back to some normalcy. And I think they've had a change of heart because, you know, again, we talked about this a little bit last week, right? Once those freedoms are taken away and you start to feel that, your response, you look at the world a little differently. So, there's a lot of people. And I think you see it in some counties, in some areas. You absolutely see that in the registration for voters. You can see that there's an influx, or at least that's, you know, what we're hearing kind of, you know, it's been in the forefront in the news. But even people, you know, there's a lot, you know, Florida's I hate to say Florida's a red state. I know we term it that way, but it's sort of a 50-50 state. But the thing is, about a third of the voters there are independents.
Yeah.
You know, so, and so the so it's important to keep that in mind. But I think people are coming for the freedom, and I don't think they're coming so much as much for the partisanship.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's just exists to me this hope that when you see something, it's almost like a, you know, a drug addict or anybody, you say they've got to hit rock bottom. I want to think that people who took a lot of their freedoms for granted or maybe weren't paying attention now understand how valuable it is to be able to, you know, we've just seen them take the masks off the people on planes, and there's just video after video after video of people cheering. They didn't want these things. Flight attendants didn't want these things. Pilots didn't want these things. Airline executives didn't want these things. So there's all these people who were doing this against their will, just against the government. So you would think that somehow that translates into starting to vote for, you know, the recognition of freedom. We're not going to allow these people to boss us around anymore. Manifest. I guess maybe the midterms will show us that. I don't know. But I just keep hoping that this was our rock bottom. But sometimes I think that evidence is almost to the contrary. Anyway. All right. We'll take a quick break here and then start coming back. What are we going to hit on today? We're going to look at what y'all are doing for the rest of the year. You wanted to talk a little bit about energy policy stuff.
Let's talk a little bit more about energy policy, and we'll chat about some of the things we have upcoming here in the state of Mississippi.
Okay, great. We're here with Americans for Prosperity, as we are every Thursday here on the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back. We're talking to Starla Brown here with Americans for Prosperity. All right, Starla, so what's going on? We want to talk a little bit about energy policy. This is obviously in everybody's brains. Did you see the headline of what they are saying oil barrel oil price should go to? They're cutting off Russia from the EU.
Right.
The idea next week is, you know, slamming the door shut on Russian oil. Did you see what they're predicting for a price of a barrel of oil?
No, I did not.
$185.
$185. Wow.
That's on Brent. WTI, I think, usually lags by about $10 a barrel. Right now, we're floating around 100. That would put us at around $175 a barrel, which I guess by public school math tells me puts a gallon of gas somewhere north of $5.50.
Yeah.
I saw something about the eventual price, but not the barrel price. So yeah, that you know, the problem is right now is because we haven't really unleashed energy abundance and vast resources. We're looking at an issue where foreign countries can actually leverage or put a wedge to hurt our country and our people. I mean, look, I know people don't like to hear it's a global economy, but it is a global economy.
Yeah.
And especially when you talk about energy, right? It's a huge piece of the economy. And so one of the things that we've seen is this agenda of shutting down the abundance and just putting little band-aids on, because it looks like the agenda's, you know, and look, we want to be good stewards of the environment. There's no doubt.
Well, there's a line there. Everybody's against pollution. You know,
right.
People right,
yeah.
Center, left. Everybody wants clean air and clean water and all these things. So everybody can have that pollution argument, but the carbon argument is the weird one. Yeah.
Right. And I'll share with you, I want to read some of the names, right? So there are a ton of executive orders you know, that are sort of these milestones, if you would, that the Biden administration has put forth. And so, you know, one of them is protecting public health and the environment and restoring science to tackle the climate crisis.
How can you be against that? That sounds fantastic.
It does sound fantastic.
Doesn't that
sound unless
great?
The science that you're using is just kind of one-sided, right?
Right.
And then there's the revocation of certain executive orders concerning federal regulation. The revocation and federal regulation part makes me nervous there, right? Tackling the climate crisis at home and abroad, catalyzing clean energy industries and jobs through federal sustainability.
These are all Biden executive order titles?
Yeah, climate-related financial risk, right? So we're going to assess the financial risk to the climate issue, right? There's an economic relief related to the COVID-19 pandemic. So there's all of these different things that are cropping up. But if you look at it, there's a theme there, right? It's the economy, it's things like sustainability. It's all this green energy. But along the way, we're talking about subsidies. We're talking about enacting more regulations. You know, one of the things the Biden administration, you know, put out recently, and obviously Mike being from the great state of Michigan, where a lot of cars are manufactured, right? One of the things that, you know, that everybody was kind of, you know, joking about here recently was, hey, the answer is just go buy an electric car.
Yeah.
Well, that's not, it's not a feasible.
We are not ready for that.
Yeah. Nowhere near ready for that. And so the problem is people are, you know, like we've talked about, they're paying more and getting less. But look at how much of this piece of inflation, when you tie it all back to the energy crisis that we're in, you know, I remember back in 1979, right, when we were, you remember gas rationing?
Oh,
remember
yeah.
those, you know, a lot of us remember that kind of stuff. And like, I don't know what, if you've heard too much out of the auto industry up in your state or.
Yeah, what are they saying?
Are they, have you had too much in the headlines about the that overall and some of these policies as far as gas prices go?
In terms of gas prices, not so much. I do know that I was just reading an article this morning that we are prepared to see gas prices rise. Pretty much what was said earlier, but I do know that we're moving towards, at least in the Lansing area, the state government unfortunately just gave $8 billion to GM to start manufacturing more EVs. So
the state government had gave $8 billion to General Motors.
Yep, to expand EV production in the state.
Wow.
I believe they call it corporate cronyism.
Yes. Well, this is, I'm telling you, and I think I might have talked to you about this on air and said I won't mention it on air, and now I'm about to mention it on air. It feels like this is a giant cash. There's so much money sloshing around in this stuff, and the biggest financial interest in the world, the Black Rocks, the Disneys, every big corporation is on board with this move. And when you poll the American people, on the biggest problems facing the United States, climate change polls at like 2%. It's like the people out in the country don't care and are not concerned. But it is one of the biggest things driving policy. Obviously, you know, $8 billion to GM in Michigan at the state level, and particularly the federal level and the supra-federal level, the, you know, the world governing bodies. Everybody's talking about climate change and all these huge things they're going to, that the things that are going to make us suffer to accomplish these things, and the people don't care about these things. So it's the money interests are driving these.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a lot of things that Congress can do, right? There's several acts they could take, but, you know, when we start talking about the Keystone XL pipeline, right? I mean, we were just a short time ago doing very well. Energy independence had come about, and we were reaching that place of energy abundance. Look, if you want to drive an electric car, you want to go that direction, or you want to drive any type of vehicle, but people need an abundance of energy, and they need options and choices. And to say that tomorrow we're just going to wake up and take oil out of the economy is a very scary thing.
Well, they're pushing this so fast. There are going to be major disruptions if these milestones mm-hmm. they're setting, you know, to force car manufacturers have a certain percentage of their fleet is electric. There's supply chain issues with even making batteries right now. Not to mention the fact you see these big snowstorms where people are trapped on the interstate for 18 hours. And my first thought every time I see those things is, ooh, wouldn't you hate to be just watching that, you know, that line go down in the charge on your car? And I've said, I think my big business idea is I'm going to come up with the 10-mile long extension cord, because the more of these things you run into, you can't bring somebody a gallon of electricity, you know, to the side of the road if they're stranded somewhere freezing to death. You know what I mean? So they are pushing us to these things so quickly, very, very quickly. And I can just see industry, why we're not ready for this.
No, absolutely not. And you know, look, the subsidies and the things that are doing that, you know, it's not the proper role of government to subsidize, when he talks about cronyism, to subsidize industries and businesses. But we see it all the time, and we see it a lot with our federal dollars. You know, things are spent. But, you know, how many times in the past have there been failed projects, right, where these subsidies go in and they're failed? And, you know, we're always bailing out industries.
Yeah.
And there's certain industries that seem to be the winners that get picked all the time, right, whether a lot of it has to do with transportation or infrastructure around transportation. When the economy goes bad, well, the first thing we want to make sure is that we still have transportation available, right? So we're bailing out industries for lots of different reasons. But, you know, one of the things that we've got to look at, too, is the EPA is still very much engaged here in American oil and gas production, right, in their regulations. And not only in the but it's in the transmission, it's in the storage and the distribution, right? And
yeah.
All of those regulations that cause prices to go up are just going to worsen energy poverty, and they're going to increase the cost. There's nothing that's being done to you know, right now to really put things down, the prices. And so this is where we're headed. We're headed to those higher prices, that $5.50 a gallon you were talking about. I don't see the dip in the prices. Maybe from state to state, you'll see some different prices. But a lot of that has to do with how far was that transported, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things we're talking about. And, you know, I was reading an article where we're really kind of talking about gas prices, right? And a lot of people, and there was a gentleman that was interviewing this article, are asking to work from home because they cannot afford if they're all, we have commuters. We've got commuters all over this country, right? You know? And they can't afford, based on their income, to make that round trip to work.
Oh, yeah.
Day.
Well, this is what this feels like, the plan to accomplish the green agenda. Mm-hmm. You know, people are not willingly going to go. As I just said, if you look at some of these polls, and I'm referencing one I probably saw 6 months ago where, you know, terrorism was still a bigger concern. You know, it was like COVID and the economy and terrorism and just all kinds of things. And climate change was either last or second to last. They have to make us suffer to then accept these other things. And if you start making what they refer to as fossil fuels, if you start making gasoline so expensive, then people will, you know what I mean? You've got to interrupt their quality of life and make traditional energy untenable for people first, and then you can force them into something else.
Right.
That makes sense. And that's what it feels like they're doing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, at this point, all we hear is blame. You know, we're blaming Russia. We seem to blame Russia for a lot of things.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. So, Putin price hikes.
Right, exactly. We're blaming Russia. But the truth of the matter is gas prices were already accelerating, going up. All of these things that we're now reaching this point, they were all coming down the funnel, right, way before the war broke out in Ukraine. So that's another piece of it. You can keep playing that blame game, but at some point the Biden administration's got to step up and say we're not doing something right, right? And we've got to make some changes here, and whether it's reducing mandates or, you know, opening up the pipelines. And we talked about this last. Remember how I said it could be 4 to 6 weeks for some of these applications to take place to do that. So when you shut something down, it isn't like a switch that you turn
right
off and on. And that's one of the problems that we're seeing. But, you know, we've got biofuel mandates. We've got all these clean power plans. And again, we want to be good stewards of the environment. But to what extent are we exacerbating or stretching what is science and what is really going on? You know, so...
Is the regulatory structure we have in this country, has it got the same regulatory capture as other industries? You know, I mean, the SEC and the Federal Reserve are supposed to be the watchdogs of Wall Street, yet the same players seem to be in all of these organizations, and they all seem to be doing remarkably well. You know, with all of the regulations, is this some of this oil companies are they want these high regulations to keep competition out? I mean, I'm earnestly asking that question because I really can't figure this out. I don't believe that Joe Biden and any of these people proposing these green policies have got some great love for the planet and they want to do better. You know what I'm saying? There's something else behind this. There's big money, big power at play in these things. It's not because they think that in 3 years the planet's going to catch on fire and go away. So something's going. There's someone behind the scenes or some industries behind the scenes that are manipulating these things.
Well, I think one of the things that's important to remember here, a lot of the green energy pieces are subsidized. You know, Matt just
right.
He talked about
yeah.
the state giving this money, right, to increase production. So you are talking about a lot of money, but it's our tax dollars.
Yeah.
I don't believe that all of it's coming. You know, it's not like corporations are just, they're going to make more money, but they're making it because they're getting this opportunity to go out and, you know, be picked as a winner versus a loser in the marketplace.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, that's the problem that we're seeing. And so there's so much in tax dollar subsidies from the federal government, in all these pieces. It's such a web that, I mean, you could research and research for weeks and weeks and follow that money trail, but you're going to see that so much of our tax dollars are going to subsidize this kind of thing. You know, one of the things that states can do, and, you know, maybe it's something for Mississippi to take a look at. I'm not sure where we have on all the laws here, but there is some bill language that's floated around out there. In fact, we had some in Florida where the state legislator can actually come in and review some of these greenhouse gas emission regulations and things that come into the state. But before the federal government could just enact it, the legislature would have the opportunity to review it and to vote on it and to work through that. And so there are some things at the state level states can do to protect themselves from some of this bad energy policy. And so, you know, that's something we'd like to see. You know, a lot of times the foundation there for protecting the citizens in Mississippi or Matt citizens up there in Michigan, right, is the state government actually working to pass some energy protection, if you will, from federal oversight that's really just a long arm of the government coming in and overreaching in the energy industry.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Larry Fink who heads up BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager. I think they manage now over $10 trillion. And I think he said that what they were going to need to accomplish the green revolution, sustainability, something like that, was $40 trillion. So that's how much is washing around this stuff. But you've heard CEOs of oil companies coming out and talking about sustainability and moving to carbon neutral. You've heard the airline CEOs come out and say our commitment. So it's all of these industry people that benefit from cheap oil that should be all for producing a boatload of oil to do these things are all coming out in support of this stuff. So it just feels like there must just be a lot of money sloshing around in this.
Yeah. And, you know, I noticed something, you know, moving here. I got a new washer and dryer, and I noticed the prices were significantly higher from the last time I bought one, which has been some time. So obviously, but because of inflation, I noticed things. But I also noticed, and I was talking to the gentleman who was in the sales piece, and he said, you know, there's so much government regulation coming out.
Yeah.
You know, and look, hey, I don't want to pay more for my energy every month, and I want energy efficiency. But you're paying somewhere, right? You're paying somewhere. And so there, you know, you see a lot of products like that are being regulated. And every time, generally what you see is when a product gets regulated, when some government regulation comes into an industry and tells people how they can innovate or build or do something or restrict them from doing that, prices go up.
Yeah, it's a hidden tax.
Yeah, it absolutely is a hidden tax. And you know, it's like anything else. If a business has to front that cost, who's paying it?
Right.
The consumer.
Customers.
Right.
Yep.
You and me.
We get all these things. It's baked
and
in
Matt,
the cake.
Matt's paying it too.
So. Yeah, that's right. All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Americans for Prosperity's new state director, Starla Brown. And Mike, what's your last name?
Matt Davison.
Matt Davison.
No worries.
All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. We're doing our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with Americans for Prosperity. So, Starla, just to wrap up real quick on energy stuff, this is something that AFP nationally is working on, right? Inflation,
correct.
Energy issues, things like this.
Yeah, this is a big priority for us. You know, if I look at what the EPA has been doing, right, and just add to that, they've been rescinding what would be there was originally some strengthening to the transparency in the pivotal science, and they've been trying to they've rescinded that. They're doing things where, you know, they're going to take steps under these executive orders to ensure that the federal infrastructure investment reduces climate pollution, sounds like a good thing, right? And to require that federal permitting decisions consider the effects of greenhouse gas emissions and climate change. When you start seeing the word greenhouse gas emissions and climate change, especially in the same sentence, that's your way of a red flag for people. Because
grab your checkbook.
Grab your checkbook, a lot of stuff like that. So, yeah, we're making it we're taking a tour around the country, and we're targeting several states in which we're really looking at what does energy policy look like, what could be better. Our hashtag is pay more, get less. So obviously if you...
I think that's the Biden administration slogan.
Yeah.
That's what they promised.
So if you're on Twitter, you're on social media, you can go to that hashtag. There's a lot of good articles to read. There's a lot of good information coming out. And we're engaging in this nationally.
Well, y'all are an economic freedom and prosperity organization, and energy touches every bit of that. Across the board, there's not a business you run that is not affected by energy, whether you're providing a service or a good. It is transported or something happens, electricity from a home-based business. You know what I mean? It's at the core of everything. I'm going to bring this up real quick, and then we'll take a quick break and come back and look at what y'all are doing around the state. But I wanted to mention this again. I talked to y'all about it before the show started today. The thing that is aggravating to me is this idea that it's just it's foregone conclusion that greenhouse gases from SUVs and coal-burning plants are destroying the planet. It's acted like it's accepted science. And it is just as bad science as mask science was. And I ran across this story that I think is very big. Sometimes I get really obsessed with things that other people do not really find particularly important. But that's just me. But I found this story about Neptune. And Neptune is the coldest planet in our solar system, the furthest away from the sun. And they found out in the last 2 years, well, between 2018 and 2020, it warmed up by 11 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
Which should say there's something going on in the universe, in the vastness of space, that a planet with no SUVs, no coal burning, just had a pretty spontaneous warming. I mean, 11 degrees Celsius. They tell us if we have 1.5 degrees Celsius change here, it's the end of life on Earth. It's catastrophe. There it moves by 11 degrees in just 2 years. And it just, this is, to me, it's a big story. I've shared it with some of my climate alarmist friends, who I'm not mad at. I'm just trying to talk to them. And I ask them, what do you think about this? That just shows that maybe the arrogance that we're trying to express, that we've got to change everybody's quality of life. We've got to redirect manufacturing. We've got to redirect the car business. We've got to redirect personal habits, all based on this conclusion that we know exactly what's causing our planet to heat or cool. And I do not think we know it all. There's an arrogance there that I think is completely misplaced. And we do not know these things, and we need to challenge this idea that they know, that they're saving us from some certainty that is not certain at all. And I think this Neptune story is a good illustration of that. But anyway, won't be the last time I mention it on the show, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Well, you can send that to the National Climate Task Force or the White House.
I'm sure
the Office of Domestic Climate Policy. Maybe they need to read that article. Maybe that would help them out with some of the science.
I get the feeling it wouldn't hit them the same way it hit me. Right. That's just my guess. All right, we're going to take one quick break, and then we'll come back. We're going to look at what Americans for Prosperity is doing around here in the state. People, this is a great organization to get involved with. You're going to be doing a lot of grassroots stuff coming up. And grassroots is where it's at. We saw it on Tuesday night at your open house. A lot of people in there very engaged on issues. They are the people who will really spark change in the state of Mississippi, which we desperately need. So we'll see what y'all are up to when we come back. Stay with us.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment here. Starla, what is going on with AFP coming up? What are your grassroots intentions for the state as you come in? You did grassroots in Florida, right? This is kind of your thing.
Correct, yeah. It's kind of my comparative advantage, I guess I'll say. You're
wholly responsible for all of the freedom that took place in Florida over the last couple of years, right?
I wish I could say that, but it does take a team of individuals and people, and there's some great people on the staff down in Florida, and they're continuing on that, but I was happy to be part of that for about 8.5 years and, really see, there's a reason we call it the Free State of Florida. And, policy champions are a part of that, right? you know, our activists and volunteers are influential in that. But, you know, the legislators who step up and sometimes step out alone, you know, we want to make sure that when they're carrying that good policy across the line, we're going to be there for them on the grassroots side. So that's an important piece for us as an organization. But one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, coming to Mississippi, and I believe very firmly in education, not just the policy of education for K through 12 and all those good pieces, but in the education of our activists. And so we're going to be investing a good bit around the state in events where people can come and really drill down into the policy and why certain bills or legislation would be good and impact the people here in the state of Florida, why they would either oppose or support things.
Mississippi. We're Mississippi
Florida,
now.
Sorry, Mississippi. I know. You got me talking about Florida, and then I go back. So why they would drill down, right? And so so what we want to do is be able to make sure that people clearly understand the policy, right? How does it impact their daily lives? What does it do to, whether it's a regulatory sandbox for businesses so they can innovate better, whether it's looking at the options in choice in education for foundational education, that K through 12 sphere. If we're looking at red tape reduction, right? You know, how does that impact me? You might not be the business owner, but by that business being able to do that, you know, it could impact you in the prices you pay, right?
Right.
So there, and also healthcare, right? There's a lot of things. We have something called the personal option. We want to explain to people more about that. You know, one of the things that always happens is, when we don't support a top-down solution like expanding Medicaid and top-down government-run healthcare, people say, "Well, what are you proposing?" Right? And a lot of times they're like, "Okay, well, I don't have another proposition.
I just know that's bad.
I just know that's bad, and I don't know what's good." Right? Well, we want to help people understand what is good, and it's not just one size fits all kind of answer, because that'd be a top-down solution again. So one of the things that we want to do is talk about that personal option, things like certificate of need, primary care physicians, you know, scope of practice, right? And empowering people to do what they were trained to do. So there's a lot of different ways to look at healthcare, you know, expanding telemedicine, right? COVID, I have story after story of people who, had it not been for telemedicine, they might not have, you know, been able to get some of the treatment or the care they needed, right?
Yeah.
So we want to talk a lot about those things. We'll make sure people understand that there are some options out there. And by passing that good policy here in the state of Mississippi, we can expand, healthcare. And when you expand healthcare and you bring competition into the marketplace, and I know that's sometimes a tough word, competition, but the idea of healthcare is we need to drive prices down, and it needs to be affordable and accessible. And that's not something we're, you know, doing for everybody that's in the healthcare field. That's something we're doing for the people who need to access healthcare,
right,
which is all of us. And so,
well, sometimes you're fighting the people in healthcare to do those things. A lot of the
players
in healthcare don't want competition.
Of course, of course. And I understand that and that kind of thing. But we're going to spend a lot of time investing in educating people on that. And then I think what happens is when people start to find things they're passionate about, those different pieces that we're going to be educating them on, they're going to want to engage. They're going to want to, you know, support bills or oppose bills that aren't taking them down the right path. And so we're going to be doing that. But one of the other things that I'm so excited about is the next steps after some of that policy is really training people to be better at activism.
Yeah.
Right?
And they can use it on any, whatever their cause is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We know that people have other causes they want to work on that we might not. And they may be very worthwhile causes. But people, you know, there's a way to work out there, to be influential in your community, to help others step forward, to recruit and mobilize people. And so one of the things we're going to do is help people do that, learn how to tell their story better, learn how to talk to legislators, right, and learn how to communicate with their neighbors and friends. And sometimes that means you're going to be communicating with people who don't agree with you. But if you can't actually sit down and have those conversations, you really can't sit there across that divide. You know, if you've drawn that line in the sand, you're never going to change those hearts and minds. But if you can start talking about policy in a real and meaningful way, and you can start having conversations with people who maybe don't agree with you, and talk to them about, you know, in a better manner, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, where we can really sit down and share ideas. maybe we find some common ground. We may not find all of it, but you know, if it's one thing, work on the one thing together. You know, it's Frederick Douglass, right? Work with anyone to do good and no one to do wrong. And so that's kind of where we're headed with the education piece. We'll be out in a lot of communities. We're getting ready. You know, we're starting here on May 7th in Jackson. We have one of our first events coming up. You can go to the Americans for Prosperity Mississippi Facebook page. We'll be getting an event up here next week with some details on that. But May 7th, it's a Saturday. It's going to be sort of almost a day-long event. We're going to have some breaks and lunch, and it's in our office in Ridgeland. And we're excited because we really are going to spend some time talking about some of our legislative priorities.
Yeah.
Working there. But we're going into Meridian, to Vicksburg, to southwest Mississippi, north Mississippi, along the coast. And so we're really getting ready to expand, and we're going to be doing these all over the state.
Do y'all do any work with people who are, I think there is probably more than average interest in running for all kinds of offices around the state with what's going on. A lot of people are taking on the school boards, a lot of people dissatisfied with the legislature here and their failure to repeal income tax or whatever else. We got a lot of beefs with a lot of people these days. If somebody was considering running for office, do y'all have mechanism to offer them advice or resources? I'm not talking about financial, but I'm just meaning, you know, because part of getting involved is, you know, trying to seek office and make some change yourself too.
Sure. I mean, there's some opportunities, and certainly if anyone wants to reach out to me, they can certainly do that. You know, there's some training along the terms of policy for that. We've had some things called capital leaders that we've done in the past, and we're you know, working with people to educate them on policy. A lot of people, you know, just really, and that's open to everyone. We're not making a partisan divide on that. But, you know, certainly if people want to hear more about policy, welcome to come and attend as well. Yeah. But we can do some things like that. And obviously there's another part of our organization that next year, we'll be looking at our policy champions and what that means, and starting to evaluate some of that.
So. Y'all about to do your scorecard for this last legislature.
We are. Yeah. I was looking at bills this morning that we're scoring, and we hopefully here in the next couple of weeks we'll get our final numbers, our first good run at that. And so we're looking forward to that. And the thing is, we want to thank our policy champions, right? Because those are the people who get out there on the front lines every day and the legislative process, and sometimes standing up and standing alone.
Right.
And so you know, we'll hold people accountable, but when they do good, we're gonna thank them as well.
Right. All right. And best place to find you is Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook, correct?
That is correct. You can find me there, or, you know, look, I'm happy to put my phone number on if you want.
No, that's all right. All right, great. Thanks so much for coming in today. We'll see you next week.
No matter Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.